Hey, Hawkeye fans, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register with our now weekly Tuesday afternoon podcast here on YouTube and other apps, talking Hawkeye football. And Kennington Smith, my colleague at the Register, here with me. For those new to the show, we're going to do first down, second down, third down, three topics, about 10 minutes each. And Kennington Smith, I would say the first 3 weeks of the podcast, the number one topic has been pretty much clear every week, and it will be again today.
Yeah, right. No, that was quite an eventful presser, and there was a lot of anticipation, I would say is the best word, leading up into this presser, especially off of what happened against Iowa State. A lot of people were wondering if there was going to be a quarterback change. We didn't see that on the depth chart, but as we know, the coaches are trolling at this point with the depth chart. So we use these Tuesday pressers as an opportunity to gain true clarity. And what we saw on the depth chart, it seems like it's pretty reflective of what is actually happening in the facility, which is Spencer Petras at this point is still Iowa's starting quarterback. We don't know what's going to happen between now and Saturday, but that is obviously the biggest takeaway from Tuesday's presser, in addition to some other things that we're about to get into. But, you know, there is no lack of interest in talking about Iowa's offense for sure, I would say.
Yeah, so first down is how did Kirk Ferentz's explanation fall flat today? I think that was kind of the overwhelming takeaway, I would say, based on Iowa fans sort of watching the video of Kirk Ferentz's comments, kind of defending the decision to stick with Spencer Petras as quarterback. Obviously, our post-game podcast, for those that watched it Saturday night, Kennington, we were convinced that a change needed to be made just for a fresh start type of thing. The fact that we've seen Padilla do it before on the field, and then to have, I think why that really fell flat today is Kirk Ferentz, let me just pull up some of the quotes talking about Spencer Petras's quote unquote body of work. He said, Alex, I think Alex is capable and think he proved that last year. I just go back to body of work. And then he said, Spencer built up credit by winning 12 straight games. He said, he's got a good resume going. In my assessment, I don't think it's fair to pinpoint one person right now. And basically he said, we're not trying to drive this train off the road. It's not an intentional derailment. And then I guess the quote to me that really stands out is he goes, I'm not asking anybody to agree with me. I'm guessing fans aren't agreeing and maybe the media, but everyone's entitled to their opinions and I'm all for that. My job, ultimately, I'm the head coach, is to decide what's best for our football team and our program. That's my assessment at this point. So I didn't get into my back and forth with Kirk in that exchange, but that was sort of – that's kind of what he said. And then there is that back and forth that we had too, which I know has got a little bit of traction as well.
Yeah, that would probably be my personal takeaway, is kind of the direct questioning between yourself and him, where it was directly off of the follow-up where he talked about the body of work. And you said, well, if we're talking about this body of work, let's look at his last 10 starts, which goes back to last season.
It's six starts. It's 10 games. Subtracting the Northwestern game. That was kind of I really just want to know. I want to understand because the last six games, as I mentioned to Coach Ferentz, was, it's 7 points against Purdue, 7 points against Wisconsin, 3 against Michigan, 17 against Kentucky, which had 3 picks, including one that everyone remembers, 7 points against South Dakota State, 4 of which were on safeties, and then 7 against Iowa State on a 16-yard drive.
Yeah, he almost sounded like he didn't believe it when you read it to him, but he asked you to repeat it. And when you frame it that way, I think that it even put it into some perspective for him. And obviously he understands what's happening in the program, but he was kind of taking it back a little bit. He said, those are some valid. He said, that's a good point, actually. But they're going with the overall body of work, which this is a buzzword now amongst Iowa fans, but this body of work does have practice culminated to it, which we don't get to see, obviously, but that has to be where most of this confidence in Petrus is coming from based on what they're seeing on the day-to-day. Another thing that stuck out, and I don't have the quote in front of me, I'm kind of paraphrasing here as I look for it, but pretty much a question that asked, is the coaching staff in full alignment with the decision-making? And he was kind of...
yeah, I've got that one. He said, that's something I wouldn't share, but I think we're together as a program. It doesn't mean everyone has to agree 100%. That was his answer. I did ask that question as well. I thought that was important to know because I just got the sense last week from Brian Ferentz, Kennington, we both did, that he wanted to make a change. He was setting the stage for a change, in my opinion. I don't have any inside knowledge on Brian that I'm sharing here or anything like that. I'm just saying, like, that was my read on the conversation, is that he would be ready to make a change. And then obviously that's still the head coach's decision, and the head coach believes for the best interest in the team that Spencer remained the quarterback. And so I think that's where fans are rightfully, I don't know, they've been, it shouldn't be the fans' decision, obviously, but to not give a thorough explanation, to just say, it's my decision, it's body of work, when body of work doesn't add up, and then my decision, I mean, that's just like, you know, F you, you know, that's like,
right,
tough luck, it's my decision, you know, and you just want to hear, I don't know, I just thought that was almost surprising, really, that there wasn't more of an explanation, like, especially when you know those questions are coming.
Yeah, I mean, it truly does not make any sense. The body of work argument, obviously, the practice thing, we don't get a chance to see practice. Iowa doesn't open up practice for any viewing periods. So, you know, while that is true, that argument is a little tired just because that's not what we get to see. And that's also not what matters ultimately. And Kirk Ferentz said that himself, we're judged on what happens on Saturday. So for me, another takeaway that I have, and what I'm thinking, goes back to what he said against Iowa State about not having their full complement of weapons. I am perceiving this also as a huge amount of confidence in Nico Reganey and Keegan Johnson, that he feels like with those two back in the fold, they will be able to do some things offensively that they haven't been able to do. And taking that a step further, there has to be a huge belief that those two have taken huge leaps from the last time we saw them play to now. Nico is a bit of a different case because he has been much more of a participant than Keegan. I did a story on Nico in the summertime about how he is extremely motivated to play better this year. He admitted himself he wasn't very engaged last year at times, and he really wants to put his best foot forward. Keegan is a little bit more of a projection because he hasn't really participated in anything from bowl practice to now. But you get the sense that how he played his freshman year, if he can just get back on the field and gain a little confidence, that he's going to be able to take a big step forward. So that's another takeaway that I have that probably hasn't been explored a lot, is that maybe he knows something that we don't about these two receivers that is going to open something up for Iowa's offense. Granted, that is not, at this point, enough of a reason for me to not even try Alex for a series. He hasn't played one snap. So I don't think that that's enough, but that's just something else that I'm trying to think of when I'm making sense of what's happening, is maybe he just truly believes that these two with Arlen Bruce, maybe that opens things up for LaPorta, that they can have maybe a little bit more of offensive diversity. Gavin Williams said that he's fully healthy. How much of a difference is all of this going to make? I truly don't know. But the long and short of it is that I think that pretty much a lot of us are in agreement here that if you're not going to change, at least give Alex an opportunity. The offense truly cannot get any worse. And I guess my last point on this, and this is something that I brought up to you shortly after availability, is that a lot of the negativity and a lot of the criticism has been directed to Spencer and has been directed to Brian for a good reason, obviously. But I'm wondering if there is a point in time where maybe they start to shift to being more of like sympathetic figures. Maybe that is too far gone at this point, but I'm wondering if this continues on for the next several weeks, how much of it is going to be more so directed to Kirk and his ultimate decision-making versus consistently blaming Brian and Spencer for what's happening on the field. They all share responsibility. Obviously, I'm not absolving anybody, but I'm sensing a very clear shift of frustration from, you know, maybe three parties to more so one party. The other two are more like collateral damages, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, Kirk definitely, you know, he was a subject of my column after the game on Saturday. I think most people were upset with him more than anybody on Saturday. I mean, and then Petrus is the one that, you know, feels the boos the most, even though I think the boos are toward the coaches. And it's not his fault they keep putting him out there. And I guess this even goes back to the Citrus Bowl when, I mean, there was certainly a lot of question of what they were going to do, at least in our eyes, going into that game because of what happened in the Big Ten title game, because of Petrus' injury. And it was just like, you know, no, it's Petrus. And then during the game, you know, the offense, you know, had some turnover issues. Obviously, he finished that game. And then it's like, okay, I guess Alex is transferring, right? And then, no, they're going to have a competition. And it was just like never really much of a competition. And so, you know, they're just continually not put Alex in the game. And so that kind of leads us to our second down, Kennington, which is, you know, teammates today, also Saturday with Sam Laporta, very, very strong words, you know, basically telling us in the media, like, you guys crap on him, and so do the fans, but we believe in him, that type of thing. We see how hard he works. It was definitely quite the another statement to fans that we've got Petrus' back. But my question is, do the players have Padilla's back, and what do they think? I asked a couple players about that today. I mean, you know, that's great that they love what Spencer does, but are they rallying around Alex as well? Because this is a really difficult time for him as well. I mean, here's a guy that came back. I just pointed out he didn't have to come back. He did, chose to come back to be in this competition, and it doesn't feel like he's really ever gotten much of a chance to get to the front of the line. And my last point, and I'll let you take it from here, is the thing I don't get about all this stuff is, like, if you put Padilla in the game, it doesn't mean you can't ever go back to Spencer. That doesn't preclude you from putting it. It's not like soccer where once you take a guy out, he can't come back in. That's still how they do it in soccer, right?
Yeah.
Like, once you replace a guy, he's out. Like, you can put him back in. Like, you could start Padilla this just, week. You could go half and half. You right. could, you know, like do a Jim Harbaugh Michigan thing. Go McNamara McCarthy or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, but no, they just refuse to put him in. And that's kind of where I'm at, is like, how do you, what to make of Alex Padilla's situation right now? What are you thinking if you're Alex Padilla?
Yeah. I mean, literally, what do you have to lose by just trying it out? We've seen the offensive numbers. We know where Iowa ranks in a lot of these categories. We don't have to go over it again. But to answer your previous points, I think that first, speaking on the players, I think that the players understand that they're in a very they're in a tough position, because they're going to have Spencer's back, obviously, because that's their, you know, their friend, their teammate, their starting quarterback. And I feel like they do have Alex's back, but I think that in their minds, they think that if they, let's say, oversell, but if they're, you know, really complimentary of Alex in practice, they don't want those quotes to be taken out of context. They don't want things to be taken the wrong way. So they're kind of put in tough positions to speak on both and appear that they're remaining objective and leaving it up to the coaches. So that's what I would say on that point. I think that they're in a tough spot. Just speaking on Alex, and this isn't any inside information on my end. This is just my interpretation of the situation from, you know, 30,000 feet. I think that he is having a tough time with this. I think that he is probably struggling some mentally, just because of everything that you laid out. He well, he came back under the notion that it was going to be open. And, you know, Kirk Francis said this, Brian Francis said this before, like, you know, he came back under the impression there's going to be an open competition. It really hasn't lended itself to that. And then it would be one thing if he came back and Spencer was lighting it up and there's nothing to talk about. But the play is so objectively bad that in his mind, I feel like he has to be wondering what can I do or what has to happen for me to get an opportunity. At this point, it probably looks like the likeliest thing is injury. And him and Spencer are very close friends. He obviously is not wishing that on him, but he wants a chance to play. And if we're talking about practice, my belief is that on top of, you know, with everything that's laid out mentally, all of those things, I feel like he is probably pressing so hard in practice to do well and to perform that he's probably making more mistakes than he normally would. So you have the normal practice mistakes that any player would make, and then there's probably more mistakes compounded onto that because he is probably going in there with the mentality of if practice means so much, then I just need to go out there and maybe be perfect. I might have to go 25 for 25, mm-hmm. throw 8 touchdowns or whatever it is. Like, he's just going out there trying so hard that maybe he's pressing the issue. He's forcing it some. He's making mistakes just because he wants to insert himself into the competition so bad. So it's a tough spot for him to be in as well. So that's my interpretation of the situation. And I'll let you comment on how you feel about that take.
I've had a lot of people ask, like, hey, is Alex hurt or something? And confirmed he's not hurt, not suspended, nothing like that. Like, he's available. He's available. He's available to play, ready to play, willing to play, wants to play, wants to help the team. And right now, just isn't getting that chance. Joe Labus, I did ask about him today. I mean, why not? And didn't get much from Kirk on that. Obviously didn't expect, to all of a sudden, oh, yeah, he looks great in practice. Yeah, I knew you're nicking, that's not going to be said. But anyway, he's around too. He's a mobile guy. We're going to talk more about mobility, I think, on tomorrow's radio show. But anyway, I don't know. I guess let me just kind of dovetail this into, I agree with, the Alex, sympathizers. That was, I don't think we mentioned this. The other part I pointed out, and we did talk about this on our podcast the other night, and it's been in my writings, but, when Alex Padilla has been given a chance, he came off the bench and led Iowa to 2 early touchdowns against Northwestern. They won that game 17-12, and he looked good in that game. They're very crisp, very solid. They waned a little bit at the end, but that's kind of Iowa, They don't really keep piling on or whatever. Then Minnesota scores 27 points, 3 touchdowns, and then Illinois, he just had a ton of drops from receivers in that game. And nonetheless, Iowa did score 33 points that day. Certainly fueled by defense, special teams, a lot of that. But, Alex Padilla was pulling the strings in that game. So that's a huge contrast. I mean, the only 2 full starts that Alex has gotten, start to finish as a Hawkeye, 27 points, 33 points. That's 60 points. Spencer Petras, what did we say? 7-7-3, 17, that's 34, plus 14, 48. That's 6 starts, 48 points. And some of that's defense. So and it's been, it's just been objectively ugly too. So that's why fans just, they're like, you got to give us more of explanation. And I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. But right now it's like Kirk Ferentz, I'm the head coach, and we're going to see that play out on Saturday against Nevada. And Nevada does not mean anything to me in this quarterback battle. This was a chance to give, I say battle in quotes. This doesn't give me any confidence if Iowa puts up 45 points this week that Iowa's offense is fixed. Nevada just gave up 55, right?
55, yeah.
To Incarnate Word, FCS team. So, and lost. So, this isn't going to tell us anything. It would have been a great chance to give Padilla a fresh start. Just kind of with the ones. And hey, here comes Reganey. Here comes Johnson. Let's get this thing going. We got a night game at Kinnick. The fans are going to get behind us. This is going to be exciting. Going to Rutgers, very winnable game. Then you've got 3 weeks going into Michigan game, where hey, Padilla got a little momentum here. And then if all things go haywire, guess what? Spencer Petras is available on the bench. Right. We saw him come off the bench at Nebraska and helped out a lot. And so he can do that job. He could be a second stringer. So anyway, that's kind of where I end the Padilla conversation, I guess. So,
And my last word on this, and I said this in the postgame pod, another thing about this full body of work and this program equity that does not make any sense when we're talking about Alex Padilla, because he's in his fourth year in the program. And all of those games that you mentioned last year, Northwestern, Minnesota, Illinois, started the Nebraska game. That was like kind of like the flu game for the team. These were must-win games. These were do or die, win, go to the Big Ten Championship, lose. And I don't want to say the season is over, but your chances of going to the Big Ten Championship are dashed.
They would have been over, yeah.
So he's played in some high state games. He's played in some high equity games. He's been in the program for a long time. This is not Joe Labus, redshirt freshman who has never played. Right. So that's just another frustrating part about this program equity, what he's built up, body of work, all of these things. It's like you have somebody who has some experience as well as somebody you claim to have confidence in to go out there and execute in high-pressure situations. But he has not been given that opportunity yet, and we are all kind of struggling to figure out why.
Yeah, and not a satisfactory explanation today from the head coach. Which is his prerogative, but it also is going to, it's pissing people off, and we will see what the crowd reception is like on Saturday night. We'll be there to report about it. All right, third down, Kennington Smith. We did want to kind of like mix up the topics just a little bit so it wasn't all quarterbacks. And I think this is a really valid thing to at least think about. It's not going to be a factor in Saturday's game against Nevada, which Iowa should win. They're favored by about 21 or 23 points. But the defense is thinning out a little bit. Today we got word that cornerback Jamar Harris is out for the season. So he was a starting corner the back half of last year, had four interceptions. You know, he had the clinching interception in the Nebraska game, had a big pick in the Kentucky game, and really hasn't been healthy since that game. So he is out. We know Justin Jacobs is not coming back anytime soon, or at least not this week, according to Kirk Ferentz. And, they're thin with YA Black still out. He had foot surgery. But just getting back to the thinness in the secondary, they played a ton of snaps against Iowa State, almost 80. That was a physical game. They played two physical games on defense. Their 4-2-5 is basically down to the studs here. You've got Roberts at corner, DeJean at cash, and Moss at the other corner. That's great. But where you have to start worrying now is no Jamari Harris now. Justin Jacobs, we don't know when. Soft tissue, could be a while. 4-2-5 is a little shaky with one more injury.
Right. And I'm pulling up a Kirk Ferentz quote from earlier when I asked about Jamari being out and Terry stepping in his place. He said, if you've got your number one guys in there that you want, that's a heck of a good start. But then he said, it's really critical. We're thin at that position, cornerback. You start thinking about the ramifications of anybody else coming out. So, behind Terry and Riley, you have Cooper as the next cornerback. Like if one of those two were to get hurt, I would imagine that Cooper would slide to that other cornerback spot.
Yeah, but then who plays cash?
That would probably have to be, I'm guessing, Sebastian Castro, who was the original the original starting cash. But then now he kind of had a few depth chart snafus from spring to now, but it looks like he's well within the two deep right now. But if let's say Cooper were to get hurt as well, if they really start to get hurt at cornerback, then you're looking at Brennan Diaz-Fernandez and TJ Hall, one of which is, I believe, Diaz-Fernandez is a sophomore or a redshirt freshman, but he hasn't played much, if at all. And TJ Hall is obviously a true freshman. So, it is – he was right on that point. It is thin at that cornerback spot. I haven't been on the beat long, but you told me before that Phil Parker is not afraid to play a true freshman cornerback, but that is not the ideal scenario right now. Obviously, And, you know, even at the linebacker spot with Justin out, Logan Klimt played some against the Iowa State game. But one play that really is sticking out to me was it might have been the first time that he was in there. They immediately took advantage of a mismatch with him on a running back, and they got beat for it. Wasn't a super long game, but it was a first down pass. So you're missing a lot there with Justin as well in the pass game and just his overall ability. So the defense has been great, and they're going to have to continue to play pretty much error-free. The margin of error for them is so slim right now with the offense. So it's kind of like a few things to worry about if you're an Iowa fan. Not only is, as sad and as crazy this may sound, 7 points is almost like the cap that the defense is allowed to give up, but every single player has to stay healthy as well, right. So to kind of maintain that level. So not a red flag yet. I would say it's kind of like a yellowish flag right now, something to look out for as we continue to go on.
Yeah, and just on the note of the defense, you know, talked to Noah Shannon today for a little while, and he said he had a little bit of a shoulder injury in the Iowa State game. That's why he left for a while. So Logan Lee logged a ton of snaps there. So that's it. It's just an alarm bell right now. You know, the defense is being asked to do a lot. They run the field for 40 minutes against Iowa State. It's not the way you wanted to start this season. Really thin in depth all of a sudden. Again, we're just kind of here to just sort of remind you that you don't want to see any more injuries. I know a lot of people want to see Xavier Wampa out there potentially, you know, as a safety or even a cash at some point. But it's also, you know, he's been deemed not quite ready. You know, he's learning at those positions. You don't want to start going with true freshmen, especially when you have no margin of error, like right now. You know, maybe later in the season you feel better about a Wampa potentially. But anyway, just throwing it out there and just let – you know, I feel like, you know, the defense has not gotten enough credit because we've been solely focused on the QB situation, which we should be, and how bad the offense is. But do want to give praise to the defense here as well, but at the same time say it's not sustainable. That's kind of my message. You know, 6.5 points per game that they're allowing, not sustainable. Can't keep doing this, or this is going to be a 4-8 season.
And that's not only the 6.5 is interesting for this reason. These are two nail biter games. Like, it wasn't like the defense held them to these few amount of points, and these are decisive victories. There is, in an alternate universe, this Iowa team is potentially 0-2 right now. Had that South Dakota State overthrow been a touchdown pass, who knows what would have happened in that game. But the way that the offense was moving, I don't know if they would have scored any more points in that game. We saw what happened in the Iowa State game. So that's why I said that the margin of error for this defense is about none. I mean, any amount of points right now against Iowa kind of feels insurmountable. And I touched on this in the post-game pod, that you know, when Iowa State went on that 99-yard drive and Iowa was only down 3 points, the general feel, at least from, like, the timeline and, like, the Hawkeye fans were like, this feels like such a huge deficit for the offense. Personally, I don't think that they're going to be in any danger of losing on Saturday, no matter how you know, how things go on offense. But that this week is the last week that we'll be able to say that.
Yes, correct.
This is the last team that you don't feel like Iowa's going to be in any type of danger. Everything after this is going to be Big Ten play. The stakes are going to be so high after this week. You know, I would argue, and I put this in my preview, that this week obviously has a lot of stakes for the offense, but it's not like Iowa's going to lose the game, I don't think. But we're going to stop using that caveat after this week. So, you know, it's really important for the offense to start sustaining some drives, taking some wear and tear off of the defense, because I'm not saying that it's going to be a 40-20 time of possession every single week. But if you get into Big Ten play and we start to see that disparity consistently, you know, I feel like naturally there's just going to be attrition on the defense just because more snaps, more time on the field, higher likelihood for injuries, all of those things. So just something to kind of throw out there and to think about as, you know, football team enters the most important part of the year.
All right. Thanks, Kennington Smith. Good conversation there. Quarterbacks, and a little bit of defense. So thank you, my friend. And be interesting to see on Saturday night. A lot of people saying that you're not going to watch the game for the first time in 25 years, that kind of stuff. You're seeing that on Twitter, that the mood is not good right now on social media. And I don't know. I've always felt like I have a pretty, I felt like I grew up in Iowa City. So I feel like I've always had a pretty decent feel for what the fan base is feeling, like the positive fans and the negative fans. My parents are typically really positive fans, for example. But I feel like every fan right now is just very, very frustrated with the decisions made from the top down of this football team. And the patience is going to be very, very thin. Very curious what the atmosphere is like on Saturday night. I kind of, you know, night game at Kinnick always means something extra, it seems like. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've only been out here for a year. Seems like to me that Iowa fans generally are very, very supportive of the team and all of athletics, really, through ups and downs and et cetera. I've never seen the fan base kind of like this down generally. And I only say that I've only been out here a year, but it seems to be very discouraging what's happening. And I think that there's a potential for it to get worse on Saturday. I think that they will be able to dominate Nevada, but if that's not the case, especially in the first half, let's say they're up 10-0 at the end of the first half or something like that, you know, it's only going to continue to kind of progress from here. So we're going to talk more about this on the radio show tomorrow. It's pretty crazy how, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, this was supposed to be, you know, a tune-up game for Big Ten play, and they're going to be rolling to a statement game, especially for the offense, not so much the defense, but it feels like a very critical juncture in the season for Iowa.
All right. Sorry we ran a little long there, but for Kennington Smith, I'm Chad Lysico of the Des Moines Register. Thanks for joining us tonight, and we will talk to you on our KXNO radio show on Wednesday night. And again, catch us on YouTube after, I guess it'd be pretty late, but we'll do the YouTube podcast late Saturday night after Iowa beats Nevada, as Kennington guaranteed. All right, take care, everyone.